The case for sainthood for Philomene Long. And it's addressed to Pope Benedict XVI, Vatican City. Dear Benedict, you may find it unusual to receive a request for sainthood from a non-believer. But I am just one of a multitude of Venice, Californians who believe that Philomene Long should be acknowledged as a saint.
Yay.
Forthwith.
The key
word here, Benedict, is acknowledged. We in Venice know Philomene is a saint and should immediately receive her seat in the pantheon of the Roman Catholic Church. And heaven too. Yes, there are requirements for sainthood. I can assure you that Saint Philomene has accomplished all of them. The first step is to be venerable. That is to have performed heroic deeds. The venerable Philomene has always been heroic. We have a video of her in the lion's den, the LA City Hall, heroically calling for freedom for the long-suffering people of Venice. She did this without regard for her own safety. And nearly every day, she hurled her poems of cosmic truth at sinners, liars, and wannabes, in a nice way, of course. The venerable Philomene wandered through the land calling on America to cease its warmongering and return to its constitutional roots, again without regard for her safety. The next step is to become beatified. Let me tell you, Benedict, know that no one is more beatified than Philomene. She lived her entire life according to the Beatitudes. The Sermon on the Mount lies at the heart of her poetry and her behavior. You want miracles? All right. You only need two, but we got lots more. Philomene, in addition to being a lifelong Roman Catholic, was a Zen Buddhist, a Zen master in our eyes. Here's a miracle neither you nor the Vatican hierarchy have achieved. Philomene blended Zen and Catholicism seamlessly. She was a Zen Catholic, surely an ecumenical faith of the highest degree. Philomene also cured our minds of blindness. She gave many of us vision to see the universe in all its hilarious glory. I can testify that I was one of those who received this eye-opening gift from Philomene. If you want more miracles after death, we've got them too. Philomene has appeared to several of the elders of our community. She has talked with us about what it's like over there and what we can do before we go. In addition, she has inspired many more, even those who never met her, to live according to the Beatitudes and to spread the poetic word in events like the Philomenian. Dear Benedict, please act on this request at your earliest convenience. We want our Philomene to be acknowledged in Rome as well as in Venice. But if you refuse or delay, we will use the other path to sainthood. If you recall, many early day saints were proclaimed by the vox populi, the voice of the people. I can assure you that no one in Venice would deny that Philomene is indeed a saint. You see, the fact is, we have already proclaimed Philomene sainthood. We hope you and the Holy See will join us in calling her Saint Philomene of Venice, the patron saint of baby birds and poets. Should I mail it? Okay.
Send it by carrier pigeon.
Or just play pigeon.
The ones we're not sending with her.
Homemade pigeon. He's got a mind space.
Homemade pigeon.
Okay. Our next reader is somebody named S.A. Griffin. He's not only a poet, but an actor, a DJ, and co-editor of the Outlaw Bible of American Poetry, which includes Philomene and many other Venice poets. And we thank you for that. And he was named the best performance poet in the LA Weekly by none other than Wanda Coleman. So, essay? Please come on.
Thank you. Philomene, you are brighter than the sun. I just found out from Harry Northup that Barry Simons passed away Tuesday. Is that what you said? So I just wanted to kind of bring that in because...
One of the original Venice West.
Yes, he was actually. He was one of the original Venice West. And one of the very first poets that I ever encountered at the Wednesday night open readings at the Warner Gallery in Hollywood at the corner of Hudson and Santa Monica. Co-joined with the Lhasa Club, owned by all the same maniac, Frederick Sauls. So I was very sad to hear that, because Barry was a really important person to me. Anyway, I'm going to read, he was a big man, I'm going to read poems by two big men. The first one by Scott Wahnberg, and it references something. I usually don't explain anything at all, but in this particular case I will briefly, and I've talked about this in the past, referencing Philomene. We went on the road, I think it was in 2005, 2006, and called ourselves the Deciders. Scott had lost both of his parents in rapid sequence within about a year. I really can't see anything. I just fucking Philomene, she's here. She's taking over my life. And so anyway, Scott was losing his mind, basically. He was falling apart. And so when we were in Santa Cruz, a young Native American woman told us that it was our goal to have somebody wash Scott's hair. And so we were going to Philomene's, John Dorsey, Scott, and I, which was, of course, epic, climbing up that fire escape with Scott's fat ass and shoving him up through there, and ourselves even crawling up there and trying not to fall and kill ourselves. It was just amazing. And we did get in there, and we paid tribute to John Thomas, and Philomene made, what was it? No, it was Alfredo, I think. You were there too, Lorraine was there too. Yeah, I think it was Alfredo. And it was like, isn't it Jacques Cocteau, that famous image of all the arms with everything going on? Well, that was Philomene cooking. And it moved at warp speed. And man, let me tell you something. It was great when it came out the other side, but it was fascinating as hell to watch it happen. And of course, that was the same time when we all smelled the gas and we said, Philomene, we think you need to light the stove. So in all of the fury, she'd forgotten to actually light the stove. Anyway, that was the Royal Poets Breakfast with Philomene and John. And we did wash Scott's hair, and he did recover ultimately, and Philomene was the person. We did it in Philomene's bathtub, and that too was a journey, getting into that bathtub with Scott, all of us washing his hair. So he references that here. Philomene, she invented dance in the deaf end of town. Vulnerable solar systems played basketball according to her vocabulary. Meet me in the rhythm by which she built us up. The roads all smiled when her bare feet reached apogee. Waltz soft tonight through all argumentative weather. Philomene, fair lady of the castle of You Got It. You and John are toe to toe on the ongoing process of hay. Feel the backbeat rise up to all tasks. Today, I hang my mind's history from her driving sky. She, active nouns, the textbook of soiree, smile, wash my hair. Around and around we roll. Philomene created the party. A time and then some was had by all. And I'm a sentimental fool, I am. I'm really tired. We're old married couple, my wife and I. And I woke her up by snoring. She woke me up getting out of bed, so I didn't sleep at all last night. We work, it's kind of a tag team, sort of bicycle built for two. So anyway, this is by John Thomas. And I assume nobody has picked this piece, so I'm bringing Tom into the soiree, as Scott would say. And this really is one of my favorite pieces by anyone. And I heard John read it a few times, in fact, right here for Philomene. And nobody could imitate John's incredible voice like thunder. Michael C. Ford comes close. But Michael C. Ford is the beautiful trumpet of love.
Ford.
Michael C. Ford, what did I say?
Ford.
Yeah, Michael C. Ford.
Ford.
Yeah. Did I say something like Michael C. Chevrolet? Is that like a primer for children? Michael C. Michael C. Chevrolet. Michael by Chevrolet. No, Michael C. Ford. Thank you, I'll be here all week. Philomene, brighter than the sun. For you, baby.
Yeah.
You'll despise me for this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think you know, I think my poetry could become very popular among the idle rich. It's just odd and dramatic enough, you know, just arty enough. All my little touches of the macabre, the grand mantle of Byronic gloom I can throw over everything. The little whiffs of obscenity and sin, my third-rate artificial enigmas, you know, don't laugh. I think I could be, you know, the rich man's Charles Bukowski. Oh, agreed, the idle rich are all assholes, but I could pretend I liked them, shamelessly pretend I thought they were interesting. I could do that, no sweat. And they would back expensive little editions of my work, sometimes discreetly. They would give me money. That would be a fine thing, you know, the discreet money. I'll be able to buy Philomene a long dress and a pair of shoes. Christ! But I'd love to buy Philomene some pretty purple shoes. That's the way it would be, you know. While I lived, the idle rich would fet me, and they would all be sorry and sentimental when I died. First, though, I'd need some pretty expensive cosmetic dental work, you know. You just can't hang out with the idle rich if you have teeth like mine. I only have 13 or 14 left, you know, 13, I think, and they're a kind of deep amber color. Too disgusting, too disturbing for the eyes of the idle rich. I'm talking about $8,000 or $10,000 worth of dentistry here, and I'll never have that much money in my life. It's fucking sad, you know, because I have this recurring fantasy in which I say to Philomene, come on, get dressed. We're going to a party with the idle rich. And she wails, but what do I wear? And I grin, showing all my new white teeth, and I say, just check out the closet, my love. And she runs to the closet, you know, and gives a little squeal of amazed delight, because there in the closet hangs a lovely long white dress, all lace, and on the floor beneath it sits a pair of Italian handmade purple shoes. Then off we go, you know, to the idle rich party. I, flashing my teeth, Philomene in her beautiful purple shoes. And at the party, I read my flashed little enigmatic poems. And it's all just crap anyway. Why do I go on like this? My teeth will never be anything but uglier. And everyone knows you can't buy happiness, right? But I tell you, I trade my soul tonight, this very minute, no hesitation, for that pair of perfect little purple shoes.
Oh, yes! Woo! Woo!
think we need to hear some more John Thomas.
Actually, someone did buy her those purple shoes.
All right.
And I have them now.
Let's go to the party for the oil rich, my dear.
Many amazing people who have come up here tonight. Harry has acted in 37 films, 43 television shows, and has published 9 books, or had 9 books of poetry published, the latest being Red Snow Fence. And this may be out of date. It could be many more of all of those. So, Harry, can you come up?
Thank you very much. You've been doing a great job narrating. Thank you, Pagerty, for inviting me to participate in this wonderful tribute. Philomene had a life devoted completely to poetry. Here are a few brief memories. About 32 years ago at Papa Bach bookstore, Jack Hirschman was reading with Stuart Z. Perkoff.
Perkoff looked at Jack and read, "What is more important, the language or the street?" Perkoff's pain got to be too much, and Philomene helped him out. In 1985, Holly and I went to the theater in Barnesdale Park. It was a play written by Robert Peters. We saw John Thomas and Philomene Long in the lobby. She was dressed all in white, and we could see that she and John were in love with each other. At Bill Margolis' memorial at Beyond Baroque, Philomene recounted Bill had once asked her, "What is poetry?" She replied, "Black on white." Bill said, "No, black on black." She was John Thomas's muse. He told me that he had not written for 17 years till they met and began going together. And about the purple shoes, when this book, The Book of Sleep, was published at the, you know, the little center over there for film and poetry south of Rose, I introduced John, and he read that poem about the wanting to buy Philomene the purple shoes, the poem that Essay read. And at the intermission, Charles McCauley, who was a wonderful actor, and he was Lee Hickman's partner, he came up to me and he said, do you think John would be embarrassed if I wrote him out a check for a pair of shoes, those purple shoes? I said, no. He would love it. And he said, how much you think I should write it out for? And I said, $80. So he wrote a check out for $80 and he gave it to John. And one other little memory, when we did a memorial for Joe Hansen, Philomene came up, and it was a little while after John Thomas had passed on. And like I said, the memorial was for Joe Hansen, but when Philomene came up here, she said, "I was talking to John last night, and I asked John, are there any poets in heaven? And John said, there is now." And I thought to myself, you mean Shakespeare and Keats aren't there? But this is The Book of Sleep by John and Philomene, and I believe that this book has entered eternity. I will read two poems, the first one by me and the second by Philomene Long. One little reference in here, there are, I've mentioned four poets, or actually four friends, standing outside the church at Philomene's funeral, and the four people were my wife Holly, Wanda Coleman, Austin Strauss, and myself. Poet ascends from the steps, arms around, physical, the four of us, friends for 40 years, on the steps of a church, occasion, death. Bowl, clay, imperfect shining, imperceptible cracks, not the empty space inside the tea bowl, but the human material, transient, emptiness filled with love for family, for God, for friends, and most important of all, love for yourself. Remembrance, the third, be a rememberer, tell stories, keep humility alive. Yeah. In the darkness, amidst the swinging incense, I saw her figure, dressed in white, head bowed, hands formed in prayer. The larger poet cooked a ham for the four of us. The steps were across from a park where my son and I had played basketball, where he had slid down a slide, climbed the monkey bars, swung. We were all quiet in Santa Monica on 7th in California. We listened to the praises, celestial. As usual, the poet got more ink on the obit page than she ever got in the LA Times book review. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She stood in front of a wall with her poem engraved on it. A massive heart attack caused her death, 15 seconds of pain. She had written well of funerals, with real physical details finally observed. Yes, she was romantic. Yes, she wrote with an expanding spiritual sense. Yes, she had long black hair like a raven. Yes, yes. Now we'll close with a poem from the book Asleep, published by Bill Moore's Momentum Press. Summer 85, Venice, by Philomene Long. Summer 85, Venice 100 degrees, but the gas shut off, so only 3 showers in 4 months, car breaks, job lost, second car breaks, house lost, little sleep, hunger, eating surplus food from a home for unwed teenage mothers, frozen burritos and chocolate milk. The pawn shops will not accept our wedding rings. You say, Philomene, I love you, when the troubles come. Winter 85, homeless in the Santa Cruz Mountains, coldest winter in 50 years, matches lit next to the skin to feel their small heat, hair in knots and strings, clothes nearly so. The greater our need, the more we are despised, rejected, finally, by all but a few. You say, my love, look to the irreducible bottom. We have each other.
Thank you, Harry. There are some people who they say need no introduction, and Wanda Coleman is probably one of those. However, I get paid by the word up here. So I just want to say that Wanda Coleman has been a magazine editor, a journalist, and a scriptwriter, in addition to being a great, great poet. And she's also written a novel, Mambo Hips and Make Believe. Do you have that, Fred? Is that in the library?
Not yet.
Well, get it, please. And anyway, I'll leave it at that. Wanda Coleman.
This is rough. Thank you, Jim Smith. Thank you, Hillary. Thank you, Michael, and everyone who the son and the daughter and poetry. Thank you, Peggy. I'm still sitting in front of my computer holding the phone to my ear screaming for about a minute when I received the call that Philomene had gone home. There's something in my life called the doubling effect. And I think that evidence of this is that 2 men very important to Philomene touched my life, Stuart Perkoff and John Thomas. Now, I knew about the nun because she was legendary by the time I was 18. I had heard of her. And that's how much strength she had and how she was affecting the culture here. And when she hooked up with John somewhere in the 70s, that's when I first actually met Philomene. But the last 5 years of her life were the years when we were warrior poets together. Yeah. And that was a lot of fun, and at the same time it was very painful, but more fun than pain. About 2 years ago, I was invited to be the guest poetry editor of the Los Angeles Review, if you've seen it. And it was my pleasure to accept many excellent poems. And when I talked to Philomene, I said, Philomene, I want a poem from you. She had been emailing me poems, and I said, can you write one about John? And we talked about it, and she said, I don't know. And I said, well, I'm gonna trust your instincts. I said, I know it might be a little soon, but I think you can pull it off. And so this is what she sent me. Last Images of John Thomas. You sit, my love, a crumpled man in a hospital wheelchair, belly swollen, legs swollen red, hands pale, thin, hands I have so often felt cupped over the crown of my head. I tell you that I am writing our 19th anniversary poem. You smile. I tell you it is a fine one, that it is deep in my heart as I speak. You tell me that you too have an anniversary poem, not yet on paper, but also a fine one. It comes from a dream you had of heaven. There is a heaven coexisting alongside us, even interpenetrating, and that you and I can step into it in many strange ways, through pigeons, seeds, the final hand clap, through abandoned garbage, by an out of business coffee shop in Death Valley.
Hello.
You do not know that you will never finish the poem. Our connection, our love, you say. If I die, it can't touch it. If you die, it can't touch it. If we both die, it can't touch it. Nothing can touch it. An attendant comes in with another wheelchair because the one in which you sit has no footrests. Reaching up to the doorpost, you begin to rise, hands trembling. You are a biblical Samson, shaking temple columns, legs apart for balance, rising higher. You look like a 9-story statue of Colossus. Thighs, 11 feet in breadth, ankles, 5 feet in diameter. It is as if I could barely wrap my arms around one of your fingers. Then, legs straightened, you stretch so high. It is as though your head will rent the ceiling. You become Afghanistan's stone Buddha. The moment before it is shot down into pebbles. In the dim light, you are the color gold, the risen John Thomas. Suddenly, you collapse into the next chair under your own weight, broken asunder, your fractured ankles, so weak you must ask an attendant to lift them a mere 3 inches onto the footrests. You look at me, place your palm upon your weak heart, and mouth the words, "My only one." You don't have to say it aloud. You and I already know. For 19 years, we have said it to each other since we first made love on that Good Friday. On Easter Sunday, when I asked, "How are you?" your reply had been, resurrected my only one. You say it twice this time. I place my hand upon my heart and move my lips. My only one, my only one. You do not know, but somehow I do. These are the last words we will say to each other. We sit still in the silence which these three words have always created, but other words enter my mind. He's dying. I watch as someone rolls you away, then you are stopped for a moment before leaving through the door. I watch you look up gratefully at the attendant, a humble colossus. Oh, love, love. How will I bear it? I think. This could be my last image of you. But I will not wait. I do not want my hand to catch your attention. You are too weak to turn, to respond. I know that you would thank me for this small kindness. I walk down the hall alone with our unwritten anniversary poems, this time saying aloud through the empty hall, he is dying, he is dying, he is dying. Good Friday, you went so quickly, the doctor told me. He was wearing his oxygen mask, smiling, waving. It is a great sorrow of my life that I was not with you. But I know you would like me to think that you were waving back at me. And so I will, love. And so I will. You are immense. And golden.
Wanda Coleman. We had a problem in putting together the program. Who's going to follow Wanda Coleman? And the person who always comes through for us came through, Fred Dewey. I just want to say one thing, Fred, it's his 13th year that he's celebrating as director of Beyond Baroque, and it's the 40th year of Beyond Baroque. Started as a little storefront in West Washington, which is now Abbot Kinney, and look at us now. Fred, what more can we say? We would be probably meeting out in a back alley if it wasn't for you. We should try that, actually, at some time. But thank you for doing this. What more can we say about Fred Dewey other than he keeps us going? And he keeps the Beyond Baroque going. Come on down.
The great thing about the Poetry Center is we're all dropping paper all the time.
Right. God, I saw this.
Couple things just to sort of start. I've just spent the last, I don't know how many days, trying to slog through the bureaucracies to get some money for the place. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to get some support for the poetry walls down on the boardwalk. And there's a wonderful photo. In fact, it's on the flyer for tonight that Pegarty took of Philomene in front of her text on the poetry wall down at the boardwalk. And this is, you know, trying to keep a public space open in this dictatorship is difficult. And Philomene probably, without any question, more than any other human being on this planet, made it possible, really, for me to continue. This is a gal who suffered more than I think any human being could possibly suffer. Somehow she managed to keep her spirit going. I have a photo on my bureau of her emerging from the waves at the beach in a bikini.
Oh.
And she's unbelievably beautiful. And she hadn't swum in the ocean for something like 25 or 30, I don't know, 25 years or something. And this is, as I said, this is somebody who suffered more than anybody could possibly imagine. I mean, her husband met a grisly death at the hand of this system. She herself suffered tremendously at the hands of this system. And there she was in the waves coming out and sort of, I don't know, I mean, 4 days before she died, we were up in the mountains. I took her up to Saddleback Ridge. It was her birthday. We'd seen Patti Smith, and who had... anyway, we went up there, it was late, and we were lying. It's this amazing sort of missile site platform out of overlooking the entire LA Basin. It's an unbelievable place that I discovered some years back. And there were two shooting stars. And she said to me afterwards, that was myself and my sister Pegarty. And she was gone in about 4 days, three or four days. This is somebody who I think has transversed really some of the most important parts of the culture of Los Angeles. Stuart and John, I think, were two of the really truly great American poets. And because of the system that we're in, these are poets that are unknown. They weren't, as much as I love Allen Ginsberg, they weren't publicists. They really loathed, both of them, the system that we live in. And yet at the same time, they were fighting for something else. And Philomene was at their side, both of them, continuing on doing her work and surviving unbelievable odds. Finally, at the end, to fight for justice for her husband. And she won. And I was very, very active, as was Wanda and a few other people, in trying to help her put this thing back together and get some justice against the system. So, anyway, Philomene was a poet, first and foremost. Her soul will live on in eternity. It's in the walls of this room. She is the one who said to me when I was in one particular dark moment running in the center, and she said, Fred, just go and sit in the room and feel the souls of the poets. So let's feel the souls of the poets, and we'll have a little clip taken by Pegarty. Is the next clip from you?
We have
another film. Oh, we have somebody else. Okay, well, anyway. We have a film coming after somebody else, but thank you all for coming out, and thank you, Jim, and thank you, Pegarty, for putting this together. The last one, I really couldn't say a single word, and this is still pretty difficult, but seeing the footage and hearing the poems and all the people that have come out tonight, I'm very grateful. Thanks.
Thank you, Fred. Well, actually, our final reader before the film is someone who celebrated their birthday 4 days ago. And that's because she's Philomene's twin sister, Peggerty. And Peggerty also had another amazing event 4 days ago, and that was the premiere of The Irish Vampire Goes West. Which I understand will be showing right here in Beyond Baroque on November 1st, All Saints Day. And you really have to see this film because it shows the artistic accomplishments of these two sisters. Incredible job by Peggerty in putting the film together, everything that goes into a film. And the lead character, the star actress, is Philomene Long, who does her thing. And it's a great film, and please mark that on your calendars, because if you missed it the other night, you gotta see this film for those two reasons. So Peggerty, please come on.
I am kind of taken by all this, but thank you, everybody who has read. Everyone was perfect. It was just a beautiful night, and those were the last words that Philomene in person said to me, with those two stars that she saw with you, Fred, and she said, "That's my birthday present to you. Those two stars that you gave me." And I did say, "That's an awfully cheap present." I realize that I don't have a lot of friends.
It's like her spirit. Is a family tradition.
It's her spirit has taken over me. Anyway, Philomene had a relationship with the muse, of course, and this poem is from her 1979 book, The Dream Awakening. Actually, it's 30 years now. But it is to the muse, and the muse to her, and the incantations of the muse, and I kind of think of it as her too, because she was my muse in a lot of ways in the film and lots of other films years ago. Litany. She is the mountains. She is the mountains, formed by cruel carvings. Her flesh burns with its bleeding. Her wounds are blinding. She has been fed by her nourishings. Her breasts are stone. Her rage is solid. Her touch is not cold. Her hands reach deep into the earth to touch the lip of balance. She listens. She will be heard. And this is this isn't, we don't have any more copies of this, but this is from a Odd Phenomenon in an Abandoned City. She, the white mist came over the sea like seed from an unknown god, while over the smooth sea the gray gulls hung motionless in the thick air. and the soft sea sung. She, and the soft sea sung, as he stared at a small child, curled like a newborn, pushed from the sea. So now we're going to show the last little short film of Philomene, which I think does accomplish showing her as the great poet that she is, and the joy and the life and how much fun she was.
Two were on fire that I saw in probably your news class, but two of them on fire.
Philomena Long was a young nun on this campus then.
At the moment the flame leaped, the chapel bell rang, and we presumed that we were to come down and pray for the fire to wave the drums to get our blankets. And we came back with the blankets, and I believed that we were going to fight this fire, 100 nuns on the side of the mountain.
When the 12-hour ordeal ended, the campus had almost miraculously been spared.
This is history. joy and a treat to introduce someone I've heard about for many, many, many years. And everyone here in Venice knows and hears. I'm just happy to be in the same room with her and to be able to sit down with you and share her artistry. Please welcome.
Irish belly dancer. David Aron, you bring back Ben Brown back now. I am so happy that these walls are filled with you. Before the noble water longed to comb to the sands, the wind to play with the grass, the word, and from the unnameable, there is one birth, one death, immense. Yet one small cup contains it. There is one book, one writer, and the reader, the writer, the book are one.
You think he said your name enough?
Even damn man said, that was a little bit of an excessive warm-up, was it?
He was gonna sleep.
Thank you.
give Philomene and Pegarty a hand. Thank you for coming out. Let's retire to the lobby and finish off the treats. And we'll see you at the third Philomena. Philomenian. I'm doing my Roosevelt.